Welcome back to Dark Florida. I'm your host, Brooke Moreland, and on this episode, we're doing something a little different. Today, I'm diving into a few strange and unsettling stories that have been circulating lately. And trust me, this one is jam-packed. We're starting with a new, credible Bigfoot sighting, but this time not from the swamps of Florida. This one comes out of Michigan and has some fascinating details that I can't wait to share. From there, we're heading straight into the world of UFOs, where things are getting even weirder. The Pentagon has allegedly been using UFOs as a ruse for years. So, what are they really hiding? And just recently, leaked footage shows a strange disc-shaped craft in the sky that has a lot of people scratching their heads. And did I mention that there's mysterious pulses being detected from deep beneath the ice in Antarctica? Because yeah, that's happening too. So grab your coffee, light a candle, and settle in because we're getting into all of that today and more. As always, if you have a story to share or want to be a guest on the show, email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. And you can follow along on Instagram for everything happening behind the scenes at Dark Florida Podcast. You can support the show by heading over to buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/darkflorida411. Be sure wherever you're listening to leave a 5-star review. It really does help the show. And be sure to share it with a friend or a fellow weirdo. Now, let's get into it. So in Michigan, a father and a son reported a Bigfoot sighting near a Monroe County marsh. And the sighting was reported to the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, aka the BFRO. And if you've been listening to the show enough, you know I've had several investigators come on, and that's kind of an organization that we reference quite a lot. They have an extensive database where they will go and investigate and determine the credibility of a sighting. It's broken into class categories. Now, I also believe that's something that we've touched on the show before, but for any new listeners who are out there, I'll go ahead and explain it again. So, when you have a Class A Bigfoot sighting, that means you saw it. There's no denying it's not a deer, it's not a bear, it's not a human. You know you saw a hairy bipedal creature that was a Bigfoot. There's no misidentifying it for anything else. Now, a Class B is basically everything but actually seeing it. So you could have smelled it, found a footprint, found hair, or heard a vocalization. So that's kind of how they break those sightings up. Class A, I saw it. I know that I saw it. Class B, I have evidence that it was here, but I didn't see it. So keep that in mind as we talk about this sighting today. Because in the report of this claimed sighting, it was reported near I-75 in Monroe County in Michigan, where a 47-year-old man and his son were bow fishing near Plum Creek when all of a sudden his dogs were startled by something that was bedding in the marsh. And originally, their dog went after what they thought was a herd of deer. So I figured we might as well go right to the source, and I went ahead and pulled up the actual report from the BFRO website. And if you've never gone on there, please be sure to check it out at bfro.net. There is a lot of good information here. You can see reports from all across the United States. They're very in-depth, and if you want to know what's happening in your area, I would encourage you to go ahead on here and look and see what sightings might be by you. So we will go ahead and dive right into this. So this is report number 78631, and it is labeled as a Class A sighting. This was submitted on May 18th of 2025. So the season is spring, May 18th in the state of Michigan. The location details are off I-75 behind an exit near the jail, near a quarry that is in the back. So the investigator notes, the two witnesses entered and exited this area from where the Winchester Street terminates at the railroad on the north side of Plum Creek. It looks like they did include some GPS coordinates, but it is noted here that it is not exactly precise. And he is still waiting for the precise coordinates because I guess at the time this report was taken was literally the day that it occurred. So we'll go ahead and skip past that and just get into what they saw. So the nearest road is I-75 and the nearest town is the town of Monroe, which I should note is right outside of Detroit. So the witness says, quote, "I was bow fishing today with my son around 11:30 a.m. We walked down Plum Creek past four bridges and headed into the marsh. 100 yards into the marsh, the dog scared up something that was bedded there. Trees were shaking, and we thought it was a group of deer. We continued on 200 more yards to the creek basin in the marsh. We sat and enjoyed the wildlife for a little while. We headed back through the cattails and saw a lot of deer beds on the way to the first bridge. We had heard sirens in the distance. My son said, 'Did you hear those?' I sat down my bow and arrow to get out my cell phone and earbuds. I wanted to listen to the police scanner app on my phone to see what was happening. My son was behind me and the dog was off to the right. All of a sudden, I heard a rustling in the trees to the left and a huge thud hitting the ground from the tree. A big, heavy animal hit the ground and crouched. It started moving towards me through the brush. My dog fired off from the right of me towards the creature. The dog almost got to it, but the creature shot off extremely fast through the trees and the brush. The dog chased the creature up the slope and over the train tracks. I then called for my dog to come back. My son said, quote, 'Holy shit, what was that? It was as big as a bear, but it looked like a gorilla,' end quote. We walked back, but we heard something crouching on the ground behind us, so we left." And that is the end of what he witnessed. Okay, so basically, their environment is this swampy forest near these railroad tracks. It looks like Matthew Moneymaker took the report, and he's a BFRO investigator and also the founder of the BFRO, and you will probably recognize him from shows like Finding Bigfoot. I guess he's the one who took the initial report and followed up on it, and he says that he spoke with both the father and the son separately, that both were credible, and they were very descriptive about what had happened to them that morning. That Edward was 47 and he was born and raised in the area. Matthew says that he asked them many questions about what they saw and what the animal did. He asked enough to discern that it was not a bear, but that it was a large, dark-furred primate that ran up a slope on two legs that looked like a gorilla from behind. And Matthew Moneymaker has deduced that yes, that would be a Bigfoot. And that the animal was roughly 10 feet up a tree when it jumped down. That's a pretty scary fact right there, to be 10 feet up in a tree and then jump down. And I know that when we're investigating out in the field, we are always looking for footprints or signs that Bigfoot has been in the area. And so many times we have to remind ourselves to look up because there's so many things you could be missing by looking down. Really, if you're going to be doing any kind of Bigfoot research, you really have to keep your head on a swivel because it's reports like these that remind you that while you're looking down, there could be something 10 feet up in a tree that's staring at you. And it's always good to look up there, look for tree breaks that are high up, that aren't low and close down to the ground. So I find that piece really interesting that they talk about how it fell and jumped from 10 feet up in the tree because that's pretty high. So it says that they got the clearest look at it when it was ascending the embankment, and this is when they could see the hairy back, and they could also see, it says, quote, "the big butt cheeks pretty clearly for a few seconds." So they were able to observe this animal, and they were able to observe the back of it. And it says here that the animal was not on all fours, that it raced up the slope on two legs, but it was hunched forward. And that in its hunched posture, they estimated that it was still nearly 6 feet tall. And the son said it would have been much taller had it not been hunched over. So hunched over, it was still 6 foot, but maybe if it sat up, maybe it would have been closer to, I don't know, 7 or 8 feet. It doesn't say. And then it goes on to say that the incident happened so fast that there was no time to even consider photographing it, that the whole encounter lasted 10 seconds from beginning to end, and it happened totally by surprise. And That is something that I hear so much with these reportings as well. And everyone's always like, well, why didn't you take a picture? Why didn't you take a video? And I just don't think people understand that one, you're witnessing something that is not supposed to be there. In all of our history books and science books and all of our educational learning, we've been told that creatures like this don't exist, that there are no such thing as Bigfoot, Dogman, Mothman, cryptids, that those are just fairy tales and myth and folklore. There's no actual credence given to it, right? So we have been conditioned to believe that these creatures don't exist. And it's one thing for somebody like me or someone like you, the listener, who believes in these things and has an understanding of what they are. We go out and we see one, that's going to be shocking enough. Believe me, when I had my sighting, I was completely shocked, bone-chilling shocked. But when you take someone who's a hunter or just a regular person who is not involved in the Bigfoot or cryptid space at all, and then you put them out there and they see this thing jump 10 feet down from a tree with their son, it's got to be a really scary feeling. And the last thing that they're thinking about is, let me pull my phone out and record this, because they're really trying to rationalize what the heck they're seeing. Because to them, they're like, is this a giant gorilla? What is a giant gorilla doing in the marsh of Michigan? It makes no sense. And then another thing I think that is really credible about this sighting is that it specifically talks about how it lasted less than 10 seconds from beginning to end. And while 10 seconds to some people sounds like a long time, it is not. And especially when you're shaken to get your phone out, get it unlocked, get it up, and try to zoom in and capture what you're seeing, it's just not possible. So I think that this just really lends to the credibility of this entire story. And that's something that I find with a lot of Bigfoot encounters, is that most of them are under 10 seconds. It's really rare that you have something that lasts longer than that. Usually they happen very quickly. All right, so moving on, they talk about the marsh for a little bit, and they do note here that it is full of deer and that the area around the marsh, that no hunting is allowed there, that only fishing is there, and that there's herds of deer in the marsh year round, I guess probably hiding from across the creek where they can hunt. Now, they did also note that there are tons of cattails around this marsh, and that is something that Bigfoots have been known to consume, especially in the winter, cattails and deer. And so those are two food sources right there. And it notes here that there's also other food sources around the marsh as well. And you have fresh water there. So we have a water source too. So it's noted here, it says that the satellite images of the marsh will prompt some people to say that this area would not be accessible to Bigfoots because there's too much development around, like the nearby town of Monroe. But this pocket of forest in the marsh is not cut off from other green belts and farmlands in the area. The ingress or an egress for the deer will be along the railroad easements heading south. It's not a long walk from the south of the railroad tracks to the Tamarack Creek to the large farm fields that are open and dark at night. Bigfoots will walk around the railroad beds for long distances, and the railroad beds will sometimes bring them into pockets of woods that are very close to towns, as in this case. And so the question in this report is asked is why Bigfoot might prefer a large pocket in woods and marsh near a town. Why would he choose that of all the things that Bigfoot could choose? Well, the closer the nature pocket is to a town, the greater likelihood that hunting is forbidden there. The area becomes a de facto safe haven for deer herds, and Bigfoot look for deer, so they will sometimes end up in these pockets of woods near towns like Monroe, where there's enough plants and animals to sustain them. And if you look on the satellite map, it looks like Monroe is sort of smack dab in the middle between Detroit, Michigan, and then Toledo, Ohio. And as I mentioned, Matthew Moneymaker took this initial report and he has deemed it as credible. And this is a fresh Class A sighting out of Monroe County, Michigan. So if you're up in Michigan, this just happened about a month ago. I find this sighting to be very credible and very interesting. There were so many tidbits from that I just loved. This was just an incredible sighting, and just want to say thank you to Edward and his son for coming forward and sharing this sighting with us. I know that was probably a very scary thing to witness and have your son there and your dog chasing after it, I can only imagine how frightened he must have been. And to be able to come forward and share this with us, that is an incredible report. So thank you to him for sharing that. And on that note, we will go ahead and move into our next story, which is only going to get stranger as this episode goes on. So we've kind of laid the groundwork for the strange, and now we're going to get into some even stranger news. So this is breaking news that just broke yesterday, and the headline reads, former U.S. pilot claims he nearly collided with a UFO in, quote, the wildest experience he has ever had. Something that really interests me are former U.S. combat fighter pilots who come forward, or just really pilots in general, who come forward with their sightings of UFOs or strange things that they're seeing in the skies. Everyone's looking down at their phones, not paying attention. That's so many times we forget to look up into our beautiful sky, and you have no idea what kinds of crazy stuff you may see. So let's go ahead and just get right into what he claims that he experienced. Major Ryan Bodenheimer is a former ace of the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds and an F-15E combat fighter pilot. And he recounted on his YouTube channel how he almost collided with a UFO shaped like, quote, a perfect rectangle while on a training mission in southern Wyoming at 30,000 feet in the sky. Bodenheimer alleged that while he was flying during the day at about 30,000 feet up at a speed of 400 knots or 460 miles per hour, when a bright object caught his attention off in the distance, Bodenheimer says that he realized that he was on a collision course with his aircraft. He was going to hit this. He said he put his hand on the control stick and that he was about to turn off the autopilot when then he realized that we weren't going to hit. And all of a sudden, it came more into view, and he could clearly see a rectangular shape. And he says this was essentially a perfect rectangle. He goes on to say that the object appeared to be 30 to 40 feet high with a bright white along the outside edges of what looked to be a glowing and clear center. He says, I know it sounds like I'm talking about a delicious pastry, which now I'm hungry, but this is, quote, the wildest experience that he has ever had. Bodenheimer, for a moment, theorized that the object could have been a weather balloon, but he claimed that it didn't look like anything he had ever seen in the sky before. He says that, quote, there's no wings on this thing, no exhaust, and the edges were so bright that they were pulsing. Aerodynamically, this thing should not have been going close to 400 knots. For a rectangle to be flying through the air was a wild experience, he said. Now, that was one of the things that struck me when I read this story as well, is I was thinking, how is this even possible that you have this perfect rectangle that is seemingly flying through the sky at 400 knots, keeping up with him? Doesn't seem very aerodynamic. That was definitely one of the first things that popped into my mind immediately when I heard the story. And I think that that's one of the common things that sort of happen with these UFO, UAP sightings, is that you will see a craft in the sky that defies the logics of physics and defies everything that we think we know. Now, he says he wasn't picking up on any signal from his radar and he wasn't experiencing any radio interference as it kept pace with his jet just a few short distance away. So this thing is keeping up with him at 400 knots and is not far from him. And now he even says here, quote, it really was defying any type of aeronautical laws that I've learned, just like we were talking about. This defied everything that he's learned as a pilot. So that stands out to me. Now, he also says that the suspected UFO zooms off and that he called air traffic control to report what he had just encountered. I find that interesting too. So it was just kind of observing him for a while, keeping pace. I mean, personally, when I hear that, I kind of think of it almost like scanning him, scanning the aircraft, and then, okay, it's not a threat, and then moving on. I mean, that's just kind of the vibe I get, that it was perhaps doing some kind of recon on him. And then it just said, okay, well, we've got what we needed, and it just takes off and is gone. Now, he goes on to say that after he told the controller what happened, he said that there was, quote, dead silence. Now, I can only imagine the air traffic controller getting that call saying, hey, I just saw a UFO up here, and I'm sure they're scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. I can almost see like the head guy in charge like moving over and like snatching the headset and saying, like, don't answer. I'll be the one to answer. I'm going to be the one to take care of this. I can just kind of see that playing out in my head. He said that there was that dead silence before they told the fighter pilot that they'd have another aircraft be on the lookout for the object. And he said that he never heard anything about it after. So that's interesting. So there's this just like long pause and silence, and they're like, yeah, we'll keep an eye out for it, and then never mention it again. And now he says he did do some research on his own. He said that there was a report filed that same day on an anomalous object that was spotted in the area. And he said that for years, he never wanted to discuss his two run-ins with UFOs after worrying about the, quote, stigma around other pilots who have shared their encounters. He feels like the stigma has dissipated a little bit, and now he's more comfortable opening up about his experiences with more reports of other military pilots encountering UFO-like objects in the skies over the last few decades. I think that his bravery should be commended. This definitely falls into the category of out there and woo and strange, and it definitely feels like people who talk about these types of things that are in positions of power are ostracized. They're looked at as whistleblowers. They're not allowed to talk about it, and it makes me wonder about how many World War II pilots or service members from the past who experienced some strange things, but because of the culture, never came forward to talk about it because they wouldn't get a promotion. They maybe would have gotten kicked out, said it was top secret stuff that they were sharing, you know, committing treason. Some of these things that kept these pilots silent for so long, and then, you know, the judgment that comes with that. So I think his bravery should really be commended, because this is the type of story that could potentially ruin somebody's career, and something that they've worked their entire life for can be ruined by a few judgmental people who might think he's lying or are mad that he's out there telling the truth, that there are things in our skies that we do not know and we do not understand. Now, when I was looking into this, it is noted that Southern Wyoming is notorious for having some of the most UFO sightings in the country, and that the city of Cheyenne is home to the Warren Air Force Base, and that they have had over 50 reported aerial phenomena out of the state's 421 sightings since 1995. And what I find interesting about that is I think that as we segue into this next story, I think that there is a correlation between some of these military bases and UFO activity. Now, as we segue into our next story, could it be some top secret testing? Absolutely. Or could it be these UFOs want to check out what we have going on? Maybe. So that brings us right into our next story. And the headline reads that, quote, the Pentagon has been pushing Americans to believe in UFOs for decades, new report finds. So as you know, the UFOs have been back in the news a lot lately. Apparently, it may be that the government wants it that way. Last week, the Wall Street Journal published the first of a two-part series that probes the ways in which the Defense Department has been responsible for creating and fostering UFO mythology in America. The article shows that the government at various points over the years has purposely sown disinformation about UFOs in an effort to make Americans believe in those little green men. And the news comes as a result of an internal investigation by Sean Kirkpatrick, who is the head of the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, aka the AARO, which was specifically set up within the Pentagon to investigate UFO sightings. Now, Kirkpatrick, who spoke with the journal, says that he's found evidence that the government has fabricated evidence of alien technology in an effort to distract from the real weapon programs that are being carried out by the government in secret. Now, before we get in any further into this article, I just have a few things that I want to say off the top. I definitely do believe that there is a sense of mis or disinformation that has been sown from a very high level. I think that in some of these cases, they are using the threat of an alien invasion to their advantage. I mean, I believe it was Reagan who said that what would bring everybody together would be a threat to not just America, but a threat to the world. I think that there is a little bit of disinformation that is sown because they are doing these secret weapon tests. I mean, take an incident like the Devoltsev Pass, right? Okay, so that happened in Soviet Union era Russia back in, I believe, the 50s or 60s. And I did cover it extensively on my channel. I did an episode of it. So episode 10 on Dark Florida, we covered the Devoltsev Pass incident and we discussed whether it was Yetis, UFOs, or a cover-up. And one of the prevailing theories and one of the things that really stuck with me was the amount of radiation that was on the hikers' bodies long after they had already been out in the elements before they were found. And one of the theories was that there were some secret military tests that were going on, and because these hikers veered off of the path that they were supposed to be on, they wound up being in an area where they weren't supposed to be, out in the middle of nowhere, where the government probably thought they could test these things and there would be no people out there, because who the heck is hiking out on the mountain of death? Probably not many people. And I think that they can use something like UFOs to sensationalize what they're doing. But at the same time, when a story like this comes out, you're going to have people who go, I knew it all along. UFOs aren't real. It's all bullshit. None of that was real. I knew that there was nothing happening in the skies. So that really discredits the UFO movement, I think, in a whole, because it's gotten to the point now with whistleblowers and so many things coming out, it's really hard to know who to trust, who to believe. I think we should question everything, because I think that there's these like two factions now in the UFO community, which is you now have a faction of people saying, nope, the government's in on it. They know what's going on. We have alien technology. We're using alien technology. And now you have this other faction from the Pentagon saying, no, we've just been using that to our advantage for years to carry out these secret government tests in secret. It's the same. Listen, two wings on the same bird. Now the Pentagon is saying that it's a ruse. I'm just saying I wouldn't be so quick to maybe believe this story. I need to look at it with a little bit tighter of a lens, but trying not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, let's continue reading on and see what else they've said. So it says that the journal frames its finding as, quote, a stunning new twist in the story of America's cultural obsession with UFOs, end quote. But while the story's specific anecdotes are certainly new and interesting, its broader findings are not, nor are they particularly stunning. Instead, they parrot what many critics of the UFO narrative have long said, that UFO mythos grew out of disinformation campaign created by a shadowy defense officials to obscure more terrestrial secrets about America's national security community. Just like we were saying. So it says that in this takeaway that they interviewed one UFO critic who's pretty prominent by the name of Mark Pilkington, who released a documentary in 2014 that argued that the government used disinformation specialists to lie to Americans and thus hide the covert activities. And still in the journal's investigation, it offered fresh details about the number of bizarre incidents that will surely tantalize even the most avid UFO researchers. In particular, in one episode by Kirkpatrick's investigation, it's that a UFO sighting at a nuclear bunker that took place in 1967 seems to show that the government's disinformation efforts were not merely aimed at members of the public, but also its own staff. Robert Salas, a now 84-year-old former Air Force captain, says that his former job was to man the bunker, which would have launched a nuclear strike at the Soviet Union in the event of nuclear war. One night, Salas says that a glowing reddish-orange oval was seen hovering over the front gate of the facility by the building's guard. Not long afterwards, Salas discovered that the missile facility had mysteriously been disabled. So, what happened? Had the aliens managed to disable the base's nuclear capabilities? Well, the journal notes that a less than supernatural, if still quite crazy, explanation for what happened may exist. So Kirkpatrick's team dug into the story and discovered the terrestrial explanation that the barriers of concrete and steel surrounding America's nuclear missiles, they were thick enough to give them a chance if they were first hit by a Soviet strike. But scientists at the time feared that an intense storm of electromagnetic waves generated by a nuclear detonation might render the hardware needed to launch the counterstrike unusable. So in an effort to test the vulnerability, the Air Force developed an exotic electromagnetic generator that stimulated this pulse of disruptive energy without the need to detonate a nuclear weapon. When activated, this device, placed on a portable platform 60 feet above the facility, would gather power until it glowed, sometimes with a blinding orange light. And then it would fire a burst of energy that would resemble lightning. Another intriguing anecdote that's shared in this report involves a bizarre custom that was inflicted upon a newly inducted members of highly secretive government programs. Those inductees would be handed a picture of a UFO, and Kirkpatrick found that for decades, certain new commanders of the Air Force, most classified programs, as a part of their induction briefings, would be handed a piece of paper with a photo of what looked like a flying saucer. The craft was described as an anti-gravity maneuvering vehicle. The officers were told that the program they were joining, that was dubbed the Yankee Blue, was part of an effort to reverse engineer the technology on the craft. They were told to never mention it again. And many of them never learned that it was fake. But Kirkpatrick said that he found the practice had begun decades before and appeared to continue still. The Defense Secretary's office sent out a memo across the service in the spring of 2023 ordering the practice to stop immediately, but that the damage was already done. Some of the officials who spoke with the newspaper dubbed this practice as a hazing ritual that spun out of control. But like most things associated with the UFO phenomena, it's easy to find a different interpretation of events. So, was this really a hazing ritual, or was it part of an intentional disinformation campaign designed to sow confusion and maintain cover for those secret programs, even within the programs themselves? Frankly, there's just no way to tell. I personally definitely think that this could be a way to sow confusion, especially among the ranks. You hear oftentimes about how people are siloed and they really don't know what they're working on. They're working in the same area, but the left hand does not know what the right hand is doing, and they never give anyone too many pieces of the puzzle. And I think that this is a very clever way to sow disinformation and to just garner even more distrust in the phenomena now that we're having these Senate hearings on the UFO and UAP phenomena. It's really hard to know who to trust and who to believe in this age of information. It seems like everything is a lie within a lie and a counter-op within a counter-op. So my advice would just be trust your instinct, but they're already here in our own atmosphere. I find that to be really intriguing. But as always, question everything and never take anything at face value and always do your own research. And to end it on this note, I really like how they end the article, and I think that they really capture it here with this last couple sentences. And they say, quote, "The simple truth is that when it comes to UFOs, it's impossible to trust anything that comes out of the mouth of the government or an ex-government official. You're better off just giving up on trying to find the truth of the matter," which of course is exactly what the government wants. So instead of giving up, I think everybody should do their own research and stay true with what your intuition and where your gut takes you. And with the evidence that has come forward, there's lots of strange things that have been reported on this channel. We've covered the Hopkinsville goblins. We've covered the DeVoltive Pass. We've covered the lead mask case. And they all have these strange ties into little green men and UFOs. And I think that there is definitely a greater phenomena that's going on here. But just make sure you're questioning everything. And now with that, we have more breaking UFO news, which this has just been quite the week for UFO news, if I'm being frank. And we've got new footage. U.S. military personnel have captured an eerie flying saucer UFO in incredible new footage that has just been released to the public. So investigative journalist Jeremy Corbell and George Knapp, whose names might sound familiar if you are familiar with any of this UFO stuff, they say that the video was recorded by a government personnel agent over the Afghan-Pakistan border in November of 2020, and it was just released to the public this Thursday. It should be noted that it looks markedly different than the other tic-tac-shaped UFOs seen in their recent military footage. So this raw thermal imagery, along with two additional enhanced clips that were produced by the U.S. government, show an unidentified craft abruptly changing direction, all without any visible signs of propulsion. And quote, "This is the first time in history that the military has filmed footage of a dish-shaped UAP designated as such by the military has been captured on camera and released to the public." Corbell also says the implications of this are huge, that the object was spotted during a reconnaissance mission by a high-altitude Air Force platform. According to internal government slides that Corbell and Knapp have seen, the UAP was described as navigating through the clouds and characterized as a disc. The military's own internal enhancements that have now been made public further underlined the object's unusual heat signature, or really the lack thereof. Corbell explained that, quote, "You do not see plumes of heat coming off of this disc-shaped object." And for those who use thermal, because we use thermal a lot when we're out in the field researching Bigfoot, cryptids, and other strange things, you either have white hot or black hot, just kind of depends on the heat signature. But when you have it on white hot, anything that has a heat signature will pop up in a bright white. And that's the kind of devoid in this footage when you're looking at it. It doesn't really show any propulsion at all. There's no heat coming off of it. So that is really interesting that this thermal imagery is kind of devoid of any evidence of propulsion, which is just kind of one of those things that I think drive the mystery of all of this. And so then they even talk about it here where they say, quote, "This was captured on a thermal sensor and it would have detected any heat if any traditional propulsion was present, but there's nothing, and that is one of the most wildest aspects." So in simple terms, that means it is unclear exactly how the disc is being powered, because terrestrial aircraft tend to use jet or propeller engines, which leave obvious trails across the sky. Now, this footage was extensively studied within the intelligence community and investigated for years, known to those with high-level access, but this footage was never intended for public release. Now, Corbell and Knapp said that they have spent over 2 years validating the authenticity of the clips with multiple sources, including individuals who actively work in the U.S. government UFO programs. They say that, quote, "The source is legit and we know it's real." Knapp confirmed this during the latest episode of their podcast, Weaponized, and he also highlights the fact that this was not supposed to be made public, even though it should have been. So to give you an idea on the size of this thing, the object is estimated to be between 200 and 400 meters in diameter, though Corbell admits that the exact size is still being debated and that further analysis is required to offer more of an accurate perspective on its size. He says that, quote, "The depth of the field and the relatively distance, the shape is undeniable." And he says that, quote, "The movement is extraordinary. You're seeing it dip into the clouds, then emerge in reverse direction, that it's not an artifact, but that it is a real object in motion." So here is what's included in the video release. Video number one, the raw capture from the Renaissance platform where the disc can barely be seen at first as it enters the frame. In video two, a government-enhanced and zoomed version revealing the object's distinctive saucer shape and directional shift. And in video three, a heavily enhanced clip used by the military for analysis showing the disc in greater detail, but with a glitch that highlights the risks of overprocessing. And of course, online sleuths have already begun poring over the footage, image, which includes the geolocation data in the bottom left corner of the screen. Those coordinates point to the border region of Afghanistan and Pakistan, which is an active conflict zone with strategic surveillance interest. Korbel says, quote, "The public has a right and they need to know. This capture is worthy of a serious discourse, not just in the UFO community, but in the international and scientific conversations. It challenges our understanding of what's flying through our skies," end quote. Korbel and Knapp have not disclosed how they obtained the footage, only stating that it was leaked and that they took extreme precautions to protect the sources. Korbel did tease that, quote, "This is just the start." And if you remember, Jeremy Korbel, he is known for releasing some of the most compelling UFO footage that has ever been made public, including that infamous Tic Tac UFO video and a series of military captured encounters that have sparked global headlines. I'm going to do my best to post it on Dark Florida's social media pages so you can go ahead and see the footage for yourself. And I will say I have watched this probably more than a dozen times and I find it incredibly compelling. And I do agree that this needs to be the source of a greater conversation. And just watching this disc go through the sky is it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And it's completely devoid of a heat signature, which also makes it really interesting. It literally, if I could describe it to you, is like that classic disc-shaped object just cruising through the sky with ease, changing direction, moving through the clouds as if it's unencumbered by anything. So I find that really fascinating. So I will be sure to share the links to that on the Dark Florida social media pages. So again, if you're not following along on Instagram, be sure to head over there and I post things from behind the scenes and all things involving the episode. I can't wait to share the footage of this with you guys. I'd love to know your thoughts. So please drop a comment after this episode and let me know what you think or shoot me an email. I'd love to have a discussion on this. Now, we're getting into this next story, which is absolutely incredible. And of course, when we're having that conversation about UFOs, naturally Antarctica would be involved, right? Well, I've got some strange news coming out of Antarctica for you guys today. And this one is a head scratcher, not only for me, but for scientists as well. And this was published 4 days ago. So a lot of breaking news is happening and this is a lot to digest. But the headline reads, quote, "An anomalous radio pulses detected in Antarctica are coming from underneath the ice." Okay, I'm going to read that for you guys one more time. "Anomalous radio pulses detected in Antarctica are coming from underneath the ice." That's right, people, ice. So a particle detector that was flying above Antarctica detected a highly unusual radio pulse coming from beneath the ice. The Antarctic Impulsive Transient Antenna, aka ANITA, experiment floats a range of instruments above Antarctica using a stratospheric balloon. The experiment is aimed at detecting cosmic neutrinos, tiny particles which only interact via gravity and the weak force originating from distant astrophysical sources as they interact with the ice. Quote, "We have these radio antennas on a balloon that flies 40 kilometers above the ice in Antarctica, and we point our antennas down at the ice and look for neutrinos that interact with the ice, producing radio emissions that we can sense with our own detectors." And now that quote came from Stephanie Wizzle, who is an associate professor of physics, astronomy, and astrophysics at Penn State University. Now, while detecting the neutrinos is odd enough, the team was recently met with a particularly unusual radio signals, which appeared to defy our current understanding of particle physics. According to the team, two anomalous pulses came from below the horizon underneath the ice. Quote, "It's an interesting problem because we still don't actually have an explanation for what those anomalies are. But what we do know is that they're most likely not representing the neutrinos." End quote. So as the neutrinos hit the ice, they interact and produce radio emissions known as, quote, ice showers. But they also produce a secondary particle known as a tau lepton, which goes on to decay as it travels, with the resulting emission known as air showers. But by analyzing the signals, researchers can determine properties of the particle that created it and attempt to trace it back to its original source. But in this case, there is a problem in that the angle of the radio pulse is much sharper than the models predict. Looking at data from other neutrino observatories like the Ice Cube experiment and the Pierre Aguirre Observatory, the team found that they had not seen similar upward traveling air showers, nor could they explain what ANITA had detected, saying, quote, "These events show strong horizontal polarization, but without the polarity inversion expected for the reflected pulses from the UH-ECR showers." Now, the team explains that they could be induced by air showers developing in an upward direction, as could be expected from the tau lepton decays produced in the ultra-high energy tau neutrino interactions below the surface. However, the direction of the observed pulses implies that the neutrinos would need to travel about 6,000 to 7,000 kilometers through the Earth before interacting with the below ice surface. This corresponds to an 8 to 10 interaction lengths required neutrino energy, causing severe annotation and requiring a flux that should have been observed with the Ice Cube and the Pierre Observatory, the latter particularly sensitive to the Earth-skimming neutrinos. Now, I understand this is a lot of technical talk, and I'd be lying if I said that some of this did not go over my head. But basically, what they're saying here in summarization is that if they weren't able to detect it, that these other two observatories who have better technology should have picked up on this because they're more sensitive to the Earth skimming tau neutrinos, but that team did not. And so what they're saying is that these detections could possibly lead to new physics. And now what they're saying and what they're guessing is they said that some interesting radio propagation occurs near the ice, also near the horizon, but they don't fully understand it. But they have explored several of those and they haven't been able to find anything yet either. So right now, it's one of those long-standing mysteries and that they should be picking up more anomalies and able to understand what they are. So basically, this physicist from Penn State doesn't understand it. So I certainly don't understand it and they don't know why it's happening. But I think what I found so intriguing about this article is that basically, this is baffled scientists that we have these anomalous radio pulses that are coming deep from the Antarctic ice. And if you know anything about Antarctica, it's kind of been shrouded in mystery. And I would love to do a proper Antarctica deep dive. And actually, I'm going to write that down for you, the listeners. I promise you, I will do a deep dive on Antarctica in case this is the first time you're hearing about it and going, well, Brooke, what is going on with Antarctica? I am promising you now on this episode that I will do a deep dive very soon on all of the weird and strange things with Antarctica. But just to start with, Antarctic Treaty, I find incredibly interesting. And also the idea that potentially the Nazis went down there and had some underground bases that were built. I think that is very intriguing. And that is something that you hear a lot about when it comes to World War II history. And now all of a sudden we have these strange radio pulses that are being detected and scientists can't figure it out. So I assure you, I will be monitoring the situation closely to see if any updates come out about this story. I will be sure to publish it because if the scientists are baffled, I am certainly baffled. Well, with that, that's going to be a wrap for today's episode of Dark Florida. And I had such a blast diving into these stories with you, from our Bigfoot sighting in Michigan to that strange activity that's coming out of Antarctica. I seriously want to know what you think. If you have a theory about the Pentagon's UFO distractions, or if you think that there's something ancient waking up from beneath the ice, or maybe you've had an encounter of your own, shoot me an email at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com or leave a comment under the post for this episode on Instagram. I would love to hear your thoughts on all of this that we got into today and get into some wild theories with you. Thank you so much for tuning in and spending time with me in the weird and wonderful world of Dark Florida. So again, make sure you're following the show on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast. Support the show if you can at buymeacoffee.com/Dark Florida. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at Dark Florida 411. And make sure to leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening to the show and share it with a friend. Until next time, stay curious, stay strange, and keep looking up in the skies.